Welcome to Period Drama Queens, a podcast exploring period dramas.
The drama, the periods.
The tropes, the frissons.
The quips and the quacks.
This season, we're taking a turn about the 90s.
We'll discuss the best period dramas created in the era of girl power, crop tops and grunge.
Time for introductions. We're two best friends who live on different sides of the world.
And we both love period dramas.
I'm Jenny, an English lit nerd and prudish mother of two who once attended a hip-hop class and is universally described as tolerable, I suppose.
I'm Millie, a sexually confused mother of one who has never attended a hip-hop class. I never talk about myself this way, but my friends have described me as a famous wit.
So bad.
So bad.
Welcome to Period Drama Queens. This week, what film are we talking about, Millie?
Well, as you should know, Jenny, we're not even talking about a film. We're talking about a miniseries, the 1995 BBC miniseries of Pride and Prejudice.
Andrew Davis's beloved
masterpiece
of Jane Austen's classic.
Jane Austen's 1813 novel by the same name.
Initially called First Impressions.
See that. Which title do you prefer?
I think Pride and Prejudice. I love a bit of alliteration.
What's it about? What's just the basic premise? For the heathens or people who need their memory jogged?
So it's about a family called the Bennets, 5 daughters, the overbearing mother trying to hook up her daughters with actually quite a lot of success.
Yeah.
And our protagonist is the incomparable Lizzie Bennet. Mm-hmm. And it's all about how she comes across a character called Mr. Darcy. He is proud and prejudiced.
And you know what? So is she. They're both too proud. They're both too prejudiced.
Yes. He makes a bad first impression. We've all been there.
She kind of does too.
Well, does she?
I think that she does. Admittedly, he's rude when he talks about how he doesn't feel like dancing, but she does not let it go.
Yeah, that's true. Her pride is wounded. So instead, she turns her sights on the handsome young man of the militia, Wickham.
A name like that, you really should know is going to be a baddie.
I mean, it's basically Wicked.
It's basically Wicked.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a great musical, but a bad word, really.
Unless you're Ron Weasley.
What?
Ron Weasley is always going, Wicked.
Is
remember
he?
How in like the 90s we all will be like, oh, that's Wicked.
I thought he was going, bloody hell.
Is he Ringo Starr?
Anyway, Pride and Prejudice, eventually, spoiler alert, everyone gets married. There are other characters too.
We'll get into it.
We'll talk about them later.
So, cast and crew. The director isn't really a big deal in this. Simon Langton. I looked at his IMDb and not that notable, but you might like the fact that he did direct some Jeeves and Wooster episodes.
Oh, I do like that.
Couldn't find a casting director on IMDb.
Whoa.
I know.
So what, they just wandered in off the street, did they?
Well, clearly IMDb doesn't think it's important enough to record it because IMDb is full of sexists, which is me being glib, but also is actually quite true. IMDb is quite a sexist website.
Okay, you heard it here first.
Unless you've heard it other places. The big person out of it was Andrew Davies, who's the writer, and he has been writing everything and anything since the dawn of time. He wrote the very famous Educating Marmalade, 1982, and its follow-up sequel series Danger, Marmalade at Work, 1984, which I don't know what it's about. Also in 1984, bang a year for him, he wrote Badger Girl.
Look, we've all got to start somewhere.
But that wasn't where he started. He'd already been in the biz for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
He wrote the UK version of House of Cards. Wrote Middlemarch, Moll Flanders, did a Vanity Fair, Son, Wives and Daughters, done a Dr. Zhivago. He's done the Bridget Jones's Diary films, Bleak House, Northanger Abbey, A Room with a View, Sense Sensibility, Brideshead Revisited, Little Dorrit, War and Peace, and then his most recent credit is Sanditon.
Wow.
And that was just like a few things that I picked because he must have such a sore hand.
I remember being about 15 and telling mum I wanted to be Andrew Davis when I grew up and do adaptations of period dramas. And that's going really well. it's not going well at all. I haven't in any way realized that dream, but it's okay because he's 86 and he's still doing it. So I've got years ahead of me. Anyway, who else is in this cast?
Well, who's in it? We've got Jennifer Earle. Old Jen is Lizzie. I'm going to leave the most obvious one to last, which is obviously Alison Steadman. She's the most obvious one to talk about as Mrs. Bennett, aka Pam.
She is amazing.
Susanna Hawker is Jane Bennett. Julia Swahala is Lydia. Crispin Bonham Carter is Mr. Bingley. Adrian Lucas as Mr. Wickham. Again, I make a ho-hum face. David Bamber as Mr. Collins. And then obviously, Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy. It was his big break. And I don't think we talk about it enough, but his name is Colin.
So what is our relationship to this film? We talk about if it's meaningful, if it has been around at significant points in our lives.
I can't remember a time pre-seeing this.
Yeah.
That's not a joke. I genuinely can't.
No.
I mean,
no.
I was born in 1991, so I am older than this. But, it was on high rotation in my family. We watched it a lot. It was a big fucking deal.
And you had the VHS?
Yes. The big fat VHS.
Yeah.
Where that's how important it was. It wasn't taped off the telly. We had the video. And we went to, I think it's Lime Park, which is the exteriors of Pemberley.
In Manchester.
And my sister bought a book on the making of the film. I did read it. And all I remember is that in one of the dance scenes, they'd varnished one of the floors. And then it was too slippy, so then they put Coca-Cola on the floor.
To make really?
Yep.
That's a hot tip.
So yeah, it's a very important film to my family. Well, not a TV series. What about you?
Honestly, the opening, it just fills me with so much joy. I remember watching it with my mum multiple times. It was my go-to, still is, for if I'm sick or feeling particularly down. It's just like comfort. I think you said that when you rewatched it, you knew every single word.
Yeah, I knew every single word.
It's particularly significant. So number one, when I was contemplating dating someone, he was a bit of a douchebag, it seemed to be. But then he revealed that he had watched the BBC Pride and Prejudice with his uni flatmate. And I was like, oh, I've had this guy all wrong. My judge on a person would be like, miniseries or Keira Knightley film, the Joe Wright film. And if they answered the Keira Knightley film, I'd be like, okay, cool. Well, you're dead to me. Yeah. But he was all miniseries. So I gave him a shot. Turns out it was not good. But fast forward, I actually walked down the aisle to the opening theme of the miniseries, played on organ, on the organ by my friend Nicola Ekatova. Shout out to Nicola.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So it's all very significant.
Very significant.
Yeah. It's Carl Davis that we're shouting out for the opening piano piece.
It is really good music.
Period. Reflections on this miniseries. How do you feel overall?
So it's tricky because I can't watch it as if I'm watching it for the first time. I could only watch it as if I'm watching it for the millionth time.
Sure.
What really stuck out to me was just how sad the Lydia storyline is and how awful everyone is to her. She's 15.
Yeah. I think it's really easy to forget.
There's lots of stuff that's really good about it. So I read this article, one of the really instrumental producers,
Sue Birtwistle.
She and the director really wanted it to have a lot of movement, so they're always outside and they're often walking and they're often in the middle of action rather than just sitting around doing nothing. So they'll be getting ready for the ball, or they'll be out for a walk, or they'll be more dynamic than just people sitting in a room. And I think that is a good point. It does seem more modern.
That reminded me of when I was at high school and was sort of angling to maybe try and capture the interest of a guy in my form class called Luke Mawson. And so the way to do it, I figured, was to do a reading swap. So I was like, hey, Luke, let's read each other's favorite books. I lent him my beloved copy of Pride and Prejudice, and he lent me The Wheel of Time series by Robert Jordan. 3 novels I read of that in the time it took him to read the slim volume of Pride and Prejudice. And all I got in response, first of all, Luke didn't show any interest in me at all. Eventually,
but he read Pride and Prejudice for you. That's quite romantic.
Well, no, he read it for me, gave it back to me with a little review slipped inside that said, It said, thanks for lending me this book. Oh my gosh, I can't get over the drama. I was so excited when they went to Meryton, .. This was the most boring book I've ever read from Luke. And I was fuming and I was like, well, there we go. That's done then, isn't it? Good luck to you.
It's a very rich text.
Well, thank you. And this is why I'd be more likely to get with you than Luke Mawson. So thanks a lot, Luke, for nothing.
Missed out. He missed out.
Well, in so many ways. On me, on the novel, on Jane Austen. Anyway, that's nothing to do with the film. How do I feel about the miniseries? Oh, I love it. Like I said, I think it holds up. I think it's, with a miniseries, you obviously have more room to be accurate to the text. So I love all of the little Jane Austen nuances that are built into that, which are missed out in like the Joe Wright film and in other film adaptations. It feels very, very true to the text.
Period.
So let's talk about casting. I think that Lizzie is perfect. Fight me. Remember how she read Pride and Prejudice during COVID on Facebook and stuff?
Oh, bless her. Brought well, you know, she hasn't done anything since.
Oh!
That's not true. She was in
he was in the King's Speech.
I couldn't go on. It was like the peak, the pinnacle, I'd say, for her.
Oh, yeah, there's nowhere else to go after you've had it.
Except if you're Colin Firth and then you go to The English Patient the next year. Oscar.
Okay, so I think that she's perfect. Yeah. You think she's not? Why is that?
I think she's a little bit wooden. I was watching it and I was actually like, a lot of the tones the actors choose, I'm like, oh, I actually don't think that that was the meaning that was meant in the script.
She's so good, I think, at doing like little nuance, like little twinkles, little wry smiles. She's so elegant. I just feel like Keira Knightley doesn't have that in her role as Lizzie. Like, I mean, I think it was a deliberate choice by Joe Wright to try and make her more down to earth or something. But I feel like it's truer to Regency. I think Joe Wright always had a hard job ahead of him.
Yeah, I think anybody who, like, there's the Joe Wright film, the 2005 Pride and Prejudice, but there hasn't really been anything else. And like, the BBC hasn't done another miniseries of it.
Yeah, I think you have to just go in a quite a different direction, don't you? Which I suppose is what
they did with Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh, well, that's true.
In this, there was definitely like Lizzie's like the cool girl who kind of knows, who's kind of a little bit better than everyone else, more elegant and sophisticated than her sisters and most of the society in Meryton, but she's also better than the really posh people because she's not such a horrible snob. She's like better than everybody. She always has like the witty thing to say, and she'd be like, she's like a cool girl.
No, I have to interrupt at this point because that's just upsetting me. She's like the actually cool girl, but she's not like the cool girl. The cool girls are the Bingleys.
She's like the cool girl to the watcher, to the
viewer. That's why she's the protagonist, because she's awesome. She's the most likable one, right? She's got the elegance and reserve of Jane, but she's got the accessibility, the whimsy, and the fun of playfulness.
Exactly,
of Lydia.
But that, to me, that makes her not as likable.
What? That makes it's designed to make her likable.
No, but because she thinks that she's better than everyone else.
I don't know about that.
I think that she does, and I think that that comes across. She's very smug. She's all like, she is. She looks down on everyone except for Jane and Mr. Bingley and her
She's
dad and her
flawed.
Dad.
She's flawed, and that makes her likable.
Yeah, she is flawed because she's so smug.
Oh my God. Wow. Well, I mean, I don't. We might have to end the recording right here. I don't know where to go from here.
Period.
Let's move on. Let's leave Lizzie for a second. So, divided opinions on Lizzie. I will maintain she's perfect. So, Colin Firth, I think he's great. And he's so awkward. He can't even articulate what he's trying to say because he's just so posh. And that is what posh people are like. I went to a wedding once where the best man was so posh, he could not speak because it was just... I feel like that comes across a bit. It becomes endearing, right? That he can't perform for society. And like you said, in the way that Lizzie does, like she is very... She knows how to play. She's got woo.
She didn't woo me, though.
Well, evidently. But you do tend to like, I don't know, recluses or something.
Yeah, well, I think maybe it's that I like the people who you see yourself in. And I think that Lizzie wouldn't like me.
I think Lizzie would love you. Are you kidding?
No, I don't. Well,
you guys would sit on the side of the dance floor just saying mean things about people and having such a good time.
But then she'd go dance with someone because she is sociable. And then I'd be there like, I don't want no one wants to dance with me.
Are you saying that you're Charlotte Lucas? Are you saying that Caleb is Mr. Collins?
Well, no, because I'm Charlotte, because Charlotte Lucas married Mr. Collins because she was like, well, it's either this or being a spinster. So I'm going to marry Mr. Collins. I wasn't like it's either Caleb or being a spinster. I was quite keen on Caleb at one point. I still quite.
That's nice.
I think Colin Firth is really good. My mom always says that Mr. Darcy is a hero that's written by a young girl, tall, dark and handsome. And I think that Colin Firth brings more dimensions to him than is potentially there in the text. And he's very dreamy.
Yeah, a billowy white shirt. I don't know why, but that's just delightful.
He wears it well.
I think we need to talk about Jane because I really like Jane and you mm-hmm. really, really don't, do you?
She comes across as just very sweet, but she's not beautiful enough and she looks like a cello.
What does that even mean?
I don't know what that means, but what? I just think I'm a waste of she looks like a cello. I don't really know what it means, just vibe.
Like, she has a really interestingly shaped face, doesn't she? And
she's very interesting looking.
She's this kind of demure that I think is like quite enchanting.
Bit of trivia, she's pregnant during the filming of that.
Oh, how pregnant?
But you could, it took quite a long time to film, so she was a variety of different levels of pregnant, but you couldn't see the bump because of the Regency style dresses.
Let's talk about the dastardly Wickham, because I feel that you have opinions.
Terribly cast.
What? Why?
You know how I was saying earlier that Andrew Davies wrote the film or TV series or whatever, I can't remember what it was, Badger Girl? I think he would have been well cast perhaps as the love interest in Badger Girl, being Badger Boy, and they look like a badger. But that makes him more endearing than he is because he's a right minger. I just don't think he's right. Like, he's not handsome enough. Yeah, he acts quite well, so I suppose I should stop being so shallow.
The facial hair is a choice, probably not his choice. Yeah, I don't know. I know what you mean. He's not like devastatingly handsome, but he is so charming. Like you say, he acts it really well. You know, people who smile when they talk, he does that. He's learnt through life how to charm people and win them over. Well,
he isn't good looking, is he?
No, he's not as good looking. And certainly he's not as good looking as Rupert Friend.
But Rupert, I don't remember Rupert Friend acting it very well. I remember thinking, should he be playing Pinocchio? Because he's quite wooden.
But he's very chiseled.
Is he meant to be really beautiful in the book? I can't remember.
Okay, let me just have a look. So Wickham is described as, his appearance was greatly in his favour. He had all the best part of beauty, a fine countenance, a good figure, and a very pleasing address.
Adrian Lucas has all of that apart from the better part of beauty.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Crispin Bonham Carter is so well cast as Mr. Bingley.
So well cast.
I really like him as Mr. Bingley.
We agree.
Crispin Bonham Carter comes off as just really jolly and happy and really cute.
He's so positive.
Yeah, he's just a little sweetheart and you just love him. And you know what? If I was Lizzie, I would fall in love with Mr. Bingley over Mr. Darcy.
Whoa, that's a big call. What about Lydia, played by
Julia Swahala?
Yeah.
She's a good actor. So in the book, Lydia's 15 and she's meant to be 15 in this. Julia Swahala does not look 15. She was 27 when it came out. And that's too old.
Yeah, that's Yeah, I'm with you. She doesn't look 15 at all.
Lucy Davis, who plays Mariah Lucas in this, and she's Dawn from The Office.
Dawn from The Office! Yeah.
She was nearly cast as Lydia. So I would have been actually very interested to see how she would have performed it.
But yeah, I think that would have been interesting and probably more heartbreaking maybe. We also need to talk about Alison Steadman a little bit more because she is just glorious. She is glorious. She's such a good actress.
I absolutely love Pam. I love her. I just love her as Pam. But she's so shrill as Mrs. Bennett. She kind of veers on. I know it's a choice, but does it veer into being a bit pantomimey?
Yeah, you equally can play Mrs. Bennett as a really dark, sad role, but that's not how she's written. You know, if you were to take that character, someone who is like looking at becoming destitute, five unmarried daughters to look after, you know, it's incredibly tragic. Married to someone who's not interested in her, doesn't take her mental health seriously. There's a whole different way to do this, but that's not how she is written. She is written and consistently described as a silly woman.
You can be play it for laughs, but not be quite so broad. I always loved how she yells "Hill," and that's because when I was a kid, there wasn't really any characters or actresses and stuff called Hillary. So Hill was, you know, the one close to Hillary when I was a kid.
So that was your representation.
I was like, "That's my girl."
One of the cruelest things Richard ever said was that we're talking about who we would be, who would you be from Jane Austen? He said, "I know who you'd be, Jen. You are Mrs. Bennett crossed with Mr. Collins."
That is awful.
Brutal.
That's so cruel.
It's very cruel. One of the cruelest things he's ever said to me.
Period fashion.
Which brings us on to fashion. The breasts.
Lizzie's breasts are really like on show. You can see why Mr. Darcy just cannot stop staring at her. And I know it's all, you know, her fine eyes, but we all know what he really means. Are there any costumes that you really love?
There's a lot of white. It always feels very airy and pretty and summery.
I can't think of anything that really stands out fashion wise apart from Lizzie's awful wig.
See, I just didn't even know it was a wig.
It's just the hairstyle with the side curls.
I love the side curls.
I suppose it shows that Jennifer Earle must be very pretty that she can pull that off and still look pretty and not like a complete spaniel. A complete and utter spaniel.
I really don't like the Bingley sisters' outfits, but I think that's good because I'm not meant to.
Yeah. It always reminds me a bit of this, you know, the evil stepsisters in Cinderella.
Yeah, because the colours are very sickly, orangey, gaudy. I like how Mary is always super modest. You know, the rest of them have always got the boobs up, but Mary's always like to the neck.
Do you think Mary's autistic?
Oh, interesting take.
Caleb was watching it. Caleb's autistic. And he was like, "Oh, she's autistic. Boom, next, move on." Obviously.
Honey.
Never quite having the right thing to say. Speaking in the way that she thinks that she's supposed to speak from the books that she's read.
Yeah, she's not got a great read on society, has she? She can't pick up on the social cues and things like that, I suppose. Yeah, it's pretty compelling. I just remembered the thing that I do really love about the fashion is the teeny tiny little jackets with the puffed sleeves that Lizzie has, called Spencers, I think they're called.
Yeah.
And I especially like her walking outfits.
There's a reason why Darcy got a boner when he saw her after she'd walked to Netherfield Hall.
I remember watching an interview with Andrew Davis where he said that, and I was watching it with my mum and she was like, turn it off.
Oh, really? So apparently the moment where Elizabeth walked to Netherfield Hall, Netherfield's a rude little name, isn't it? Netherfield sounds like a bush, like pubic hair. So it's the bit where Lizzie's walked to Netherfield Hall to check on Jane because Jane's got sick because she went for a horse ride in the rain, which you get wet in the rain. If you're the Wicked Witch in Wizard of Oz, you melt. If you're a gremlin, you turn evil. And if you're a Jane Austen heroine, you will nearly die if you get wet.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're an Austen hero, you just look sexy. Anyway, so it's that moment and Mr. Darcy walks into her and she's all muddy and Andrew Davis wrote in the script notes, this is the moment Darcy suddenly realizes he fancies Elizabeth very much and to his surprise finds he has an erection.
Yep.
Do you think he acts it well? Are you like, oh, he's definitely got a boner?
It genuinely didn't occur to me. I don't even know if that's possible to act that you've got an erection with just showing your face.
Maybe. And if anybody could do it, you would think it would be Colin Firth. He's a very good actor.
I mean, we can't really talk about fashion in Pride and Prejudice without talking about the quite iconic fashion moment of Mr. Darcy, Colin Firth, out of the water. Now there's a really creepy statue of him.
Really?
Yeah, in the grounds.
Of lime.
Emerging from the water.
Apparently people are usually surprised that that's not in the book, but of course it's not in the book.
Yeah, of course it's not in the book.
I've got a fun bit of trivia about that.
Oh, yeah?
They filmed the bits with Colin Firth underwater in a water tank, but they filmed a stuntman jumping into the pond, and the pond was so polluted the stuntman got really sick.
That's awful. Did he get duck itch?
Andrew Davis wrote that scene in.
Of course he did. The filthy guy.
To, you know, add a bit of comedy and humanity to Mr. Darcy, that he's, you know, oh, it's so embarrassing. I'm all damp from the pond. Like, that's what he wrote it in as. But everyone remembers that as a super sexy scene.
Yeah, and I think sure.
It is because Colin Firth does look really good in that wet linen shirt, doesn't he? Yeah. And the whole time I was like, pan down, let me see his nips showing through. Let me see those nipples showing through. Pan down, he's not wearing a vest. He does look good. That is a good fashion moment.
It is a good fashion moment. And it is a good turning point, like him being a little bit caught off guard. Does it do it for you, the Regency outfit? Would you like to see your paramour don a wee linen shirt and a jacket?
I would. I do quite like the linen shirt look and the breeches. I don't actually like the trouser side of it, the little like capri pants that they wear. Not that into that. I'm not that partial actually to the lady Regency look. And as much as you like those jackets and those little Spencer like jackets them. That she wears do look very sweet. Also, what about most of her body? And I'm glad her boobs are warm, but like, what about the rest of her?
That's true. They're really impractical, aren't they? These words are top notch, total mic drop. I quote them. So were there any quotes that you love?
I've already said the quote that I love the most from this adaptation. Hell! There's, you know, banging quotes from the book. Tolerable, I suppose, not handsome enough to tempt me.
Rude.
A single man in possession of a large fortune must be in want of a wife. That's not true, but I guess that's kind of the point. Is that the point? What do we live for but to make sport for our neighbours and laugh at them in our turn? Another great one.
Oh, I really enjoy a lot of David Bamber's delivery of Mr. Collins's lines. My favourite one, it's been many years since I've had such an exemplary vegetable.
If I'd cooked and said that to me, I would be putty in their hands. I thought of another one, actually, another quote. When Lady Catherine de Bourgh comes at the end to try and stop Lizzie from marrying Mr. Darcy, and she talks about how there's a bit of wilderness.
Yes, I like the agreeable bit of wilderness. It's so condescending. She is the queen of condescending.
That is something that my dad likes to say sometimes, I think.
Does he?
He finds it funny.
He's a real Lady Catherine, isn't he? Let's get trivia. She's gonna get trivia. Now it is time to hand over to you because you are so good at knowing the little ins and outs of the biz, the little secrets that they'd rather us not know. The tidbits that have been swept under the cinematic carpet. It's time to get trivial.
And I would love to get trivial, but I've actually already told you all my trivia for it throughout. I've integrated it.
No, I appreciate that.
As you do with a good essay.
That's true.
I'm maturing as a podcaster. Oh, here's two bits of trivia, actually, I just remembered. Mm-hmm. First bit of trivia. Mm-hmm. Anna Chancellor, who plays Miss Caroline Bingley. My mom thinks that Anna Chancellor should have played Lizzie, which I do not agree with, because Anna Chancellor plays Miss Bingley, has very fine eyes, and she does have beautiful eyes, but I still can't see her as Lizzie at all. But anyway, Anna Chancellor is a descendant of Jane Austen.
Really?
Yeah. Descended from one of Jane Austen's brothers.
That's amazing. That's a wonderful
trivia. There you go. That's my bit of trivia for the trivia section.
So, book versus movie. We've talked around this a little bit already, but one of the main differences is that the novel is primarily about Elizabeth and Elizabeth's perspective. So it all starts off with her family. We don't meet Darcy until she does.
Yeah, I do. I like the fact that they focused more on Darcy than Austen did in the book. The benefit of it being a mini series is that they can do extra things, you know, like show him have a bath, have a hot steamy bath. Show him. They really like getting him wet, don't they? A difference between the book and that this adaptation is they don't quite tell Wickham's lie very well. I think it should be in there, actually, that he did go back and ask for the job and was turned down because Darcy's like, I gave you the money.
Yeah, it's your bad.
Rather than Darcy giving him the money and then Wickham just being an agent of chaos.
Some other differences. The Meryton Assembly, which is where Elizabeth and Darcy meet, that is really short. There's differences that you can have with a visual medium. Those really iconic moments are much bigger on screen than they were in the book. Also, because Pride and Prejudice was first like written as first impressions, and then it underwent lots of changes. And Jane Austen's early work, a lot of it was epistolary, so it was on letters. So letters play a big, big part in the novel and to an extent in the adaptation, but obviously less so. And then also because they had 6 hours to fill, they actually added in stuff, which is very unusual. Little mini scenes that bogged out the relationship with Charlotte Lucas and with the family and the Bennet sisters. And that's where I think Andrew Davis does really well because it works quite seamlessly. I think you'd be hard-pressed to pull them out.
Sexiness.
So the lake is obviously...
Well, is it a bit of sexual tension between them or is it just the power of Colin Firth and a wet top? Like, is it that there's connections between those two or are you just like...
I think it's very metaphorical. I think he...
Oh, he's wet and she's wet?
Yes, I wasn't going to go with that, but yeah, that could be true. I mean, she, like, let's be honest, she is very excited over Pemberley, but I think it's him. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's being revealed. He's taken away all the pageantry that normally surrounds him, I suppose. And
he's a lot friendlier.
Yes, and she's very into Pemberley. What are the other moments that you like? I love the dance. I love the dance. I think Mr. Beveridge's Maggot is perfection.
May is a beautiful tune. It's a sexy tune. I'm just so disappointed that they don't kiss.
I'm so glad they don't kiss.
You wouldn't want to see them kiss.
Ugh, no.
They were a couple IRL.
Were they?
Yeah. They met on this and got together for a wee while.
Man, you've got trivia up the wazoo.
I do. It's uncomfortable. I mean, I actually don't think there's that much romantic. There's that many romantic moments. To me, the epitome of the period drama romantic moment is actually from the 2005 Pride and Prejudice, where Mr. Darcy put Elizabeth in a carriage and then he like touches her hand, and then he, as he walks away, he flexes his hand, and it's like that's like the epitome of
flipping Joe Wright and his handography. The man is obsessed with hands. Yeah,
no, I guess I like the bit where she's helping Georgiana with the piano and then he's staring at her and she's staring at him.
That's a beautiful moment. It's not like a sexual attention moment, though. It's more like a
love. I think it is. I think they're both like, oh, my gosh. What? How attractive. Oh, my gosh. They're so sexy. Remember when he was in a wet shirt? Remember when she had mud on her petticoats? Oh, my gosh.
I was just going to say, that harkening back to the sexy Regency men, my friend Sarah and I, when we were at university, we'd found a YouTube compilation that was called Regency Men, and it was to the tune of I Need a Hero. And then it was literally like clips cut together of Regency men looking dashing, emerging from ponds, riding on horseback. And when we had a bad day or studying was just tough, we would just sit together and just watch it, just on repeat a lot of times and just like heart racing. And something about that soundtrack as well, like dun, 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 as we were like, oh, he's on horseback. Oh, look at that.
Period.
Is there any sexual tension between Lydia and Wickham?
No, it is a bit of a...
Even though she's in her undergown or her...
Oh, yeah. Gown,
and he's sort of disheveled and they've just clearly...
Oh, it's obvious. Together. Like, it's BBC period drama. Like, they've just done it.
They've been doing it. Do you think that there's much of a chemistry between those two?
No. But that's not really supposed to be. You are supposed to be surprised, aren't you? Well, obviously, Wickham's a bit of a paedophile, right? Like...
Yeah.
She's 15. And as much as Julius Wahala's 26 or whatever, the way the character is written is she's very young and giddy and flirty and doesn't really understand.
Let's talk about that, because I think you've been hankering to talk about it.
Yeah, I have. I mean, that's the thing that stood out to me so much on this watch was I just felt so sorry for Lydia. And the book and this adaptation definitely seems to have, there is a bit of sympathy for her, but overall it is, you know, this is her up and comings for her bad behavior, that she gets married to this horrible man who doesn't like her, who only wanted to sleep with her and then leave her. Mm-hmm. And it there isn't a huge amount of sympathy for her when actually it's so tragic. And Wickham is a paedophile. And Mr. Darcy, from a safeguarding perspective, should have told people when Wickham tried to do the exact same thing to Georgiana when she was 15.
Yes.
And I also think the treatment of Georgiana and Lydia is very interesting. Like, Georgiana is just viewed so much as a victim in what happened between her and Wickham, whilst Lydia is painted as equally responsible.
Yeah, and it's really interesting.
And it's kind of like, well, you know, Lydia was asking for it because she's so flirty, whilst Georgiana's nice and shy. And so she, to me now, that hasn't aged well. I don't think Lydia really understands them. Her storyline is that she's gone ages and ages away from her family with her man who's horrible and doesn't like her.
Yeah, you're right. It's incredibly sad. And you really have to bring that in critically, like distancing yourself from it, because in no way are we positioned to think that or feel sympathy for Lydia. I don't think we are at all. And it is like a great family tragedy, but the focus is more on how it's going to ruin the rest of the family, how it's going to ruin all of their marriage chances and their respectability. And oh, thank goodness that Darcy and Bingley can overlook it. It's not really about Lydia.
And throughout the whole mini series, before she runs away, Lizzie is really scolding of Lydia. And I can kind of, I mean, from one point of view, it's like, well, yeah, she's your sister and you find your sister really annoying. But I'm also like, she's a 15-year-old girl. Get alongside her. Jane Austen has a real bee in her bonnet about silly women. She really doesn't like silly women.
Yeah, that's right.
And I can understand that from her perspective and her time. Men would have cast so many women aside because women were silly, and there would have been a lot of silly women because they hadn't been educated. They hadn't been allowed to be anything other than silly.
Yeah, and she'd be like, you're bringing the whole sex down. Come on.
Yeah. From my point of view, it's not their fault that they're silly women. It's not Mrs. Bennet's fault that she was never educated, that she was never treated anything other than as a child almost.
I mean, yes and no. You can be uneducated, but not hysterical or narcissistic or selfish. I think it's those traits of both Lydia and Mrs. Bennet that actually are the bad ones.
I would be so horrible to both of them if I knew them and have no patience for them. But from like an outsider perspective, I'm like, oh, you know, I do feel for them. And also poor Mrs. Bennet having a husband that just has zero respect for her.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, I feel like a lot of what you're saying is valid, and a lot of it is helpful to apply it back. But also a lot of it is just so anachronistic. You just were lucky to get married, right? Like, I'm not saying that's right, but that's what it was. If you had a partner who didn't actually abuse you, that was great.
I'm not saying that Jane Austen was wrong to write these things and wrong to have these opinions at all. But I'm saying that as a viewer now.
Yeah, it just.
As somebody now, I have a different perspective than Jane.
You spin me right off, baby, right off. Like Joey, baby, let's make a spin-off.
This kind of brings us to a spin-off that we'd like to see. And I'd like to see a spin-off with Mary just being her little neurodivergent self, finding somebody who is interesting and cool and not a sycophant like Mr. Collins, and just having a nice relationship. And maybe she writes her own book of sermons.
Maybe, you know? That would be awesome. I don't think she would, yeah, because she's too pious to believe at that point that a woman's voice.
Well, maybe she finds somebody who says, you know what, you can be a pious woman and write some sermons.
Well, I would love to see that for Mary too. There are so many, like the world of Jane Austen spinoffs is so deep and dense that it's just not even for me worth getting far into. But it would be really interesting to see what happens to Lydia.
I would love there to be a Lydia spinoff where she, I don't know, just get just justice for Lydia.
Yeah, like she grows up a wee bit, realizes
she grows up a wee bit, but still stays fun. There's nothing wrong with liking to have fun and being a flirt. She still stays fun. Well, I think that Jane Austen kind of thinks that there is something wrong with being a bit flirty.
Yes, I think she does too.
I kind of see that she's just going to become her mother, right?
Yes, absolutely. With a completely disinterested partner who's like, you were attractive once and now you're boring.
I'd maybe actually like to see a kind of, in their twilight years, Mr. and Mrs. Bennet falling back in love. Mr. Bennet realizing that his wife isn't so awful, and her becoming a little bit less ridiculous.
But she is quite awful, isn't she?
She's got a good heart, though. I think she does care. She does love her daughter.
Not really. She's like quite hot. She's horrible to Lizzie. She's just self-interested. Like, she only likes Lydia because she reminds her of her.
That's true. Well,
I think she's just a raging narcissist, and I just think that's how she's created. But like, again, I'm saying there is a more sympathetic way to view her. You could, like, so maybe we need to see the early years. That, I mean, that would be really fun to see.
Oh, a prequel.
Mrs. Bennet get together, a prequel. Yeah.
She drinks a tea drink. She drinks a port drink. She drinks a spruce beer. She drinks an orange wine.
Whenever Darcy's staring at Lizzie. Can you think of any others?
Whenever Mr. Collins is being sycophantic.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever Mrs. Bennet mentions her nerves.
Oh, it's a goodie. Whenever Mrs. Bennet yells, Hill.
Hill. You'd get quite smashed when Wickham has absconded. That would be
period. One thing we haven't talked about, queer theories behind Charlotte Lucas.
Yeah, I really like Charlotte as a character. She's so fascinating, and I can't tell if her ending with Mr. Collins is sad or good, like, or the best that she could probably have got in that time. Yes, I mean, it's really sad because she always says she tries to spend as little time as possible. She's like, oh, he's in his garden, so I don't have to see him a lot.
It's not as sad as Lydia marrying Wickham kind of optimistically.
Yeah, true. She goes in very much with her eyes open.
I see Charlotte Lucas as kind of Jane Austen doing a bit of a thought experiment.
Oh yeah, about what?
As what her life would be like if she'd settled for someone rather than not settling and then becoming a writer instead. Yeah. So I suppose you could say the other option for Charlotte Lucas was if she hadn't married Mr. Collins, she could have become Jane Austen.
Yeah.
So that makes it a very tragic.
Well, I mean, I don't know if Charlotte could have afforded to have married, and you'd be so aware that you're such a burden on the finances of your family, wouldn't you? That she's removed that. She's given herself autonomy, power. Mm-hmm. So the queer theory that you're referring to, I actually haven't read any queer theory about Jane Austen. Is it that what Charlotte might be gay, asexual?
Yeah, I haven't read it either. I've just heard of the people talking about it, and that she's got no interest in heterosexual marriage.
Yeah, because I don't think she's shown, like, I mean, she might be attracted to women and have no way to show it at all, but I just don't, I think that she comes across more as asexual, doesn't she? Or aromantic as well. She doesn't see it as anything other than a means to an end.
I think it's interesting because from the perspective of the time that we're given, you know, that marriage was such an important economic thing for women, you would think that more people would be so kind of logical and clear-eyed about it. Less women would be wanting the love story.
Oh my gosh. What? There is a new musical called Charlotte Lucas is 27 and Not Dead in New York. And it is a two-act queer adaptation of Pride and Prejudice with a contemporary rock pop score.
Oh, I want to go see it, eh?
Made to create an inclusive space for queer people, people of color, people of all body sizes in the beloved world of period romance. Charlotte Lucas is 27, unwed and surrounded by romance-obsessed 20-year-olds in the marriage-centric society of 1812. She aspires to marriage for all of its practicality. Charlotte loves Lizzie, like, a lot. Okay, so it's suggesting that she's into her. Oh, and she gets with Mary.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I was thinking that. Okay, so Mary and Charlotte Lucas very much could be gay, could be not gay. But I also think just because people are weird doesn't mean that they're gay. Yeah. Doesn't mean that they're not gay, doesn't mean that they're gay.
Yeah, no, I agree. And also both of those characters stick out because they're not traditionally beautiful as well. We're told that they're quite plain. And also I don't think that that equates to anything other than what it is. I don't think there's any case for like really speculating on Mary's sexuality other than that she's a character. For Charlotte, I think so, just because there's a point made about her not being at all interested in men and thinking that they're all the same and having a very dim view of marriage. That looks like a fun musical though.
So, is it bad of me that I actually have quite a lot of respect for Charlotte Lucas making the choice that she made?
No, I think it was a very brave choice.
I think so too. I think it was a very clever choice.
Overall, thumbs up or thumbs down for 1995?
Oh, it's got to be a thumbs up.
Oh, I was about to say, if you even contemplate putting a sideways thumb.
No, it's a thumbs. It's a classic. There's a reason why they haven't remade it, really, apart from the 2005 version, which is a whole different kettle of fish. It's a Citizen Kane of period Rooney series,
yeah,
right?
It's the gold standard, isn't it? Like everything wants to be as iconic as that. Yeah, I love it. I want to watch it all the time. I want to watch it right now. Now that we've been talking about it, I want to watch it again even more. So thumbs up from me.
We definitely should talk about this in the Does It Hold Up? Oh. It's very white, very, very hetero.
Yeah, it is.
But then the text is as well.
It is. It is. And there's a whole question about rewriting. I think it's really cool that things like Bridgerton are taking the opportunity to recast and reimagine.
I think Sanderton does it more successfully.
In Sanderton, the start, the bit that she'd written, because it was unfinished, she did mention the mixed race person of Mary Lamb. And then they just
Interesting.
It's so interesting.
That's text.
Yes, it is.
That's canon. That's so interesting.
I know. So that's not...
That makes me more angry about Bridgerton. We really should do an episode on Bridgerton.
Yeah, I think we should. I actually recommend to anyone to read the first part of Sanderton that Jane Austen wrote. It's really good.
Is there a bit where a handsome naked man comes out of the sea?
No, that she didn't get that far.
Period.
So next time, I think maybe our last one in the 90s series, Howard's End.
Merchant Ivory, Howard's End.
That's going to be brand new for me. I've never seen Howard's End.
It is really good.
Haven't seen it, haven't read it. Look forward to giving you uninformed opinions.
You've been listening to Period Drama Queens with Jenny May and Millie Day.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow us on Instagram @Period Drama Queens. See you next time.
Bye.